So we're starting a new series on the Jewish home, and there are many, many important points that help us build a good home. The first point we have to remember is patience. Things don't happen overnight. Part of building a relationship involves the ups and the downs and the frustrations and the happiness. There's nothing better than a good relationship with a spouse. There's nothing sweeter than a good home you could come home to, someone you share your life with, someone you share your decisions with, someone who's your partner in building everything, someone who you feel is an extension of yourself, which is the level of the relationship that we aspire to, that it's not just someone who's my partner, but this is actually an extension of me. As the famous story goes of Rav Aryeh Levine coming to the doctor and saying, my wife's foot is hurting us. That's where you want to get to. The relationship should be all-inclusive, and it's true and it's normal that Hashem created within each person a desire for intimacy, a physical desire, and a desire not to be alone, a great fear of this remaining alone, a great fear of fending against life on one's own. But at the end of the day, that's not what the relationship revolves around. These are important components to the relationship. But the relationship is supposed to develop to a point that it is an essential part of who we are, and it is something which requires work and time and effort. And most people in our generation have one of two handicaps. A large part of our generation grew up in homes where the relationship was not the way it should have been. So they have that handicap. They're walking into the relationship where in the back of their minds, they have what they saw at home. And as much as they tell themselves, I'm not going to do that, and I'm not going to do that, at the end of the day, by default, when push comes to shove, the most natural way to react is what we saw at home. And I find that a good way to deal with any challenge is to put it into writing. A person has to actually write down, what do I anticipate will be my challenges? I did this when I was in yeshiva about life. I wrote to myself, what do I anticipate my challenges in life are going to be? I still have letters that I wrote as I was asking myself, where do I want to get to? And what do I believe are going to be my challenges? And how do I want to overcome them? And every so often I'd force myself to review that and grade myself. Where am I holding vis-a-vis my life's goals? So sometimes we shift our life's goals. Sometimes we say, okay, that wasn't realistic, but now my life's goal is this. But at the end of the day, we can figure out to a degree what the challenges we face from that handicap are going to be, and we can try to address them. That's one handicap. Then you have the exact opposite handicap. Someone who grows up in a home where everything's great. The parents have a great relationship. And then they enter marriage, and suddenly, this isn't at all what I saw at home. My mother would never talk to my father like that. What you don't know is what your parents' relationship looked like when they got married. Because you only started realizing they had a relationship when they were 15, 20 years into that relationship. And you know what? 15, 20 years into your relationship, your wife isn't going to be talking to you the same way she's talking to you in the first few years either. And your parents won't remember. So the greatest tool you can have to building your home is to have homes to emulate. And that's why I always say, go out on Shabbos, have the meals you have to be at the machon, but every other meal, you should try to be at different families and try to learn from them. Look at how parents talk to one another. Look at how they talk to their children. Try to learn from it. When possible, try to have conversations with them about it. Ask them what tips they could give you. You'll learn from people. People are willing to share things. Some are and some aren't. Don't get on their nerves. But you should try to see different homes. And as you see them, you will develop role models for yourselves. And even if your parents had a fantastic relationship, there's always what to learn at other people's houses. There are things that your parents didn't do. Maybe your father did not help take off from the Shabbos table at the end of the meal. Maybe when the food came out nice and hot and the yummy portions were still there, your father didn't think to put some food on his wife's plate before everyone else got a portion so that she doesn't get the last portion, but rather she gets the first portion. Maybe your father didn't think to wait for your mother and only start eating when she was at the table. Maybe your father didn't think to ask your mother which zmiros she likes to hear. Maybe your father didn't prepare divrei Torah that your mother would enjoy hearing. There are many things you could learn. And as you go to people's houses, you'll see different things that you can learn from. And you should watch and take mental notes, and that will help you grow. And that can give you much more than the class can give you. I don't know which points to address. I don't know where every person's coming from. So, together we're going to try to paint a picture. But at the end of the day, you have to know what canvas you're writing on. If you're going to write on a black canvas, then you're going to be very skimpy on your usage of black ink. But if you're writing on a blue canvas, you write differently. And if you're writing on a red canvas, you write differently. So at the end of the day, I don't know what canvas each of you is. I don't know. I'm giving a class and I don't really know where every person's coming from. Sometimes guys only come to me years later and tell me, oh, you know, my father was abusive. Okay, maybe I should have said different things in class if I would have known that. Years later, a guy comes to me and tells me all kinds of other things about the home he grew up in. I might have worded it differently. So that's where you go to a home and you see the real thing. So then you start getting a picture that's going to be much more accurate than we can describe in class. That being said, we will try to address certain classical points and classical ways to help to build together. So, what did we discuss so far? The greatest asset, the most beautiful thing, the partner who is going to evolve into being an extension of yourself is a wife. And we said that it takes time to get there. There are challenges. You don't get there in the beginning. As much as you think everything's great, it only gets better with time. But there are ups and there are downs, and we have to be prepared for the long haul. Marriage is about the long haul. The long ride. With time, it gets better. But part of that time is that there are days and nights and weeks and months and years where you don't feel like you're working your way up. And you ask yourself, okay, how am I getting out of this losing streak? Okay, that's part of the challenge. It's part of what you build. Okay, so where do we begin? I like to begin with asking which points people feel should be addressed in the class. But in order to do that, I got to get pen and paper. So I take notes. I won't remember every point. So that gives you guys a chance to think. And I'll be back in a minute. Think to yourself, which points would you like us to cover here? And I've learned many things from the questions people ask. So to be continued in 60 seconds. So I would like to begin with... maybe the point that Ari raised, because it's really an important point. Ari asked, what is it in the Jewish home that adds, that makes it pleasant, tranquil? Ari, did you want to say it differently?
No. Oh, did I make a face?
I thought you said something. So I guess we have to discuss a little bit of the do's and a little bit of the don'ts. And before we do that, I think it's important to set a goal. Very often in life, we have this idea of where we want to go, but it's not really defined. And I think it is important to define it. And the more vivid the picture we can draw, the more we will be able to zone in on how to get there. So, where do we want to go? You'll tell me We want a home where you wake up in the morning with a smile to your children. And let's just take that as an example. Then you realize that in order to be smiling at your kids in the morning, chances are you need to have gotten enough sleep. It's a little bit hard to be smiley, believe me. When a kid wakes you at 1 in the morning, at 2 in the morning, at 3 in the morning, at 4 in the morning, at 5 in the morning. What?
All 5 of them.
I meant all 5 of them.
All 5 of those times.
I meant all 5 of those times. You will see when you have your first newborn that that's what life looks like. And I remember at one point my mother-in-law called us up and said, "Kids, do you have soragim? Do you have bars on your windows?" So we asked her, "Why do you ask?" So she said, "First, I want to make sure you don't jump out. Second, I want to make sure you don't throw the kids out." It's frustrating. You reach certain points that are so trying on your nerves that you're just ready to cry. But you know what? The more we can be realistic about where we want to go and how it is that we can get there, the more we will be fair with ourselves when there are times that you can't get there. You could be sweet and cheerful to the baby when you're one of those parents who has a 9-to-5 job and a wet nurse who takes him during the night, and you're out of the house all day. It's always exciting for me to hear those parents talk about the wonderful time they have with their kids when they spend all 30 minutes with the kid. That's beautiful. Yeah, okay. Now go try spending a day with him. He's climbing up and down. He's riding on the walls. Go deal with that with a smile.
Riding on the walls?
Try taking apart the walls. Come to my house. Show me one wall my kids haven't ridden on. And I live in that house. And I'm the one that has to deal with the landlord afterwards. Are you talking about writing on the walls? Show me one thing they didn't write on. You know this recorder? This sweet recorder here? This is recorder what? Number 5, 7? You know how many watches my kids destroyed? You know how many cell phones my kids destroyed? Toilet, bath. And as you grow and mature, you realize, okay, I just got to be more careful about where I put my watch.
What? And,
you know how many times they took apart my wallet? You get that appointment with the doctor who you've been trying to get for 3 months, and you finally have the appointment, and you show up the appointment, and you don't have your card from the Kupat Cholim, and you say, "Gee, I could have sworn it was here yesterday. I didn't take it out." And you come home, and you see it in your kid's little toy truck. And you know, someone's been through your wallet this morning. Yeah, come on, that's part of being a parent. Yeah.
Isn't that slightly like a Yirat Shamayim problem in a way? Because I never did any of that stuff when I was a kid. I never once wrote on anything.
Really?
Once touched my parents' stuff.
You remember what you did at 2 years old?
2 years old?
2 years old? No.
And I can tell you,
I did for my 3 years old.
Different kids do different things.
Sure, yeah,
but it's not a problem of Yirat Shamayim. And that's what I want to get to as far as the don'ts. Meaning, sometimes people put religion everywhere. It's here, it's there, it's everywhere. It becomes a plague. Religion is, it's everything. It isn't. You know, part of it is a normal kid. The Talmud tells us that one of the rabbis told his students, when your kids reach this and this age, get them old pottery. They're at a stage where they have to break things. So don't get upset at them because they're breaking your good dishes. Give them the broken down pottery, let them break that. So on our day, what I do is that everything that breaks in the house, if it's a tape recorder, if it's a shaver, if it's any instrument that breaks, I give the kids, I cut off the electric cord so they can't get into trouble with it, and I give it to them to take apart. I give them a hammer when necessary, I give them a screwdriver when necessary. I'm not taking apart. They let out all their energy. Someone throws out an old copy machine, cut off the cord, I bring it home for them to take apart, to see how this works, that works, okay. 3 weeks later, I take it back to the dump, it's in pieces. Say there, let them, there's normalcy, and there's also normalcy in a relationship. What?
You know, there are inkjets and copiers.
I learned the hard way. Yes, I didn't think of that before I did it.
I was chasing someone's kid last week, and he was playing with something. I was very attentive, and he's like, "What's this?" I'm like, I don't know. And like, I thought he just picked up something randomly, and I'm like, "He seems awfully quiet. I should check up on him." And he was playing with an ink cartridge. I got ink all over his hands, all over this. I'm like, "No."
Do you know what the lead story on the witch shaman was today? In Saudi Arabia?
Oh, wow.
The father, he had kids asked for a PlayStation, and the father came home without it, and he took his, he had, I guess he had a pistol, and he put it down and walked away, and he took the gun and shot the father.
4-year-old kid.
So you should be happy. You're
I think that's more like
you're writing on your wall.
That must be enough of an accident.
The kid took the gun, pulled the trigger, and killed his father.
In Saudi Arabia?
In Saudi Arabia.
Not Texas, they
look. I'm just saying, so count your blessings. I'm going to get jet.
I never shot a gun in
any little.
Well, you're from Texas.
So, the Talmud tells us that Hillel came home one day. He had an important guest. And he asked his wife to have the meal ready. And he's sitting with the guest. And an hour passes, and 2 hours pass. And about 2.5 hours later, his wife shows up with the meal. So after the guest leaves, Hillel asks her, "Honey, what happened?" So, notice he called her honey. The Talmud says he called her BT, which was their term for honey. Like, today, that was their term. That was their loving term back then. So she said, "Well, when you walked through the door, I had the meal prepared. And then he sat down, and a poor man came knocking on the back door. And he was dying of hunger. I had to give him to eat. So I gave him the food to eat, and then I pulled out the flour, and I kneaded the dough all over again, and I baked your bread again. And I pulled out the meat, and I salted it, and I put it in the oven, and I cooked it all over again. And you know what? That time I got the whole meal ready from start to finish, all over again. It took 2.5 hours. So he said, "You should be blessed." And he said, "You see, a person has to be patient at home. If you want your wife to do what's right, you have to be patient. And specifically, when it comes to religious things, the Talmud says, if a person applies religious pressure at home, then his wife will know there has to be meat for Shabbos. So what happens when she goes to the store and she can't find any meat? They're all sold out. So she'll go to the shuk. And then there'll be a store owner that doesn't have a hechsher on his store. But she'll say, you know, I need to have meat for Shabbos. You know, what are the odds that his meat aren't kosher? So she'll buy that meat and she won't tell you. Why? Because there's religious pressure. The Talmud says you apply religious pressure at home, you get less observance, not more.
That, but he didn't eat the meat. The wife wrote, I just listened to your shiur about that from Ran.
Okay. It's a Gemara. The Gemara says, let's say his wife doesn't get to light the Shabbos candles on time. But if her husband comes home and the candles aren't lit, he's going to tell you, "No Shabbos, how'd you not light the candles?" Comment like that. So she'll light the candles. It's Shabbos. But a wife feels very acutely. She feels any word of criticism, she feels tenfold. You just whisper it, she feels it tenfold. Chazal told us, you want observance in your home, then you have to be calm about it. Things have to be said pleasantly. So if we speak about the assets of a Jewish home, we have to realize that in order to get to those assets, we have to lay the foundations. And the foundations are not necessarily the root we think they are. The foundations are about love, about patience, about normalcy. That's a big word. Normalcy. Yes. Normal. Normal means your wife wants to chat with you on the phone. That's part of the relationship. You chat on the phone. And It's interesting how Chazal were so attuned to the needs of a husband and wife within a marriage. Chazal tell us, Meshei ami tegarishun mibeit ta'anugeha. The prophet said, you chase out the wives of my nation from their house of pleasures. So the Talmud says, what's that talking about? It's talking about the following scenario. In the days of the Talmud, so everyone knew when a woman was pure or defiled because it affected a million things in their lives. It affected the sacrifices they brought. It affected the truma they ate. It was a part of life. The defiled people would use these utensils and eat this food, and the people who were pure would eat these food and these utensils. When a woman went to mikvah, when she finished her period, so she'd take her kids along with her, and her bed along with her, and her utensils along with her. They'd tovel everything together, because all the kids that she fed were tummy with her. Everyone, you know, it was a whole shebang. So it wasn't like today where everything's all private and no one knows when a woman's pure or defiled, because it's only relevant to one thing, her relationship with her husband. In the days of the Mishnah and Talmud, it was relevant to all of life. So, so the Talmud says, imagine the following scenario. You have a couple where you know that they're not pure, so they're not going to be intimate tonight. And they have a studio apartment. And you're visiting in town, and you could pitch a tent and go to sleep. And it's pleasant outside, you could do that. Or you could say, hey, do you guys mind if I pass the night in your house? The Talmud says, if you're in that house that night, they're not going to be able to have any conversation the way they would ordinarily before a couple goes to sleep, even when they're prohibited. The woman isn't pure right now, so their beds are separate, but there's a certain conversation that has a certain level of intimacy that takes place before they go to sleep. And if you're in that room, they're not going to do that. So get out, go pitch the tent. The Talmud says, if you're the guy who actually is not nice enough to ask if you could spend the night by them, so they're not going to turn you down. About that, the prophet was lamenting. Neshei ami tegarishun mibet anugea. You chase out the women from their house of pleasures. What's their house of pleasure? The capacity to have that conversation at night with her husband. So the Talmud wanted us to be attuned. You ask me what's unique about the Jewish home, so we're going to explore many aspects, but they're not what we think they are. Meaning they're more in the realm of a sensitivity. We're going to learn the Talmud and Bava Metzia that discusses the importance of what we say and how we say it, and the biblical prohibition of causing one's wife any form of pain from something we've said, and the sensitivity that Chazal wanted us to have for that. Of course, there are the things that enrich our lives, be it the Shabbos table, be it the Yomim Tovim, be it the time we have together as a family, but those are just a part of the picture. In general, there's a sensitivity that we will be learning about as we go along, and it's quite different from what people would imagine. Meaning, the person who is most zeal about Torah and mitzvos has to be most zeal, most zealous, about his care of how he approaches people. And proof of the pudding is, who would you imagine as the person who's the great zealot when it comes to the laws of the Torah? You'd say Shammai, right? What does Shammai tell us in Pirkei Avos? Shammai Omer, Hevem kabel et kol ha'adam b'sever panim yafot. Make sure when you approach someone, you have a nice, warm countenance when you approach them. Shammai! Yes, because being a zealot when it comes to the laws of the Torah means also being a zealot when it comes to my interpersonal relationships. I have to be so super careful that when the person approaches me, I have a warm look on my face. That's what Shammai taught us. Not what you'd think of a zealot, right? You'd think mean, rough, tough, who knows what. No, along comes Shammai and says, Hevem kabelet kol ha'adam. Notice he said even a non-Jew. Kol ha'adam, any person that you greet, you should greet b'sevel panim yafot. And this applies even more so within the home. Which brings us to another important tip. Sevel panim yafot. Yes, with a warm, with a pleasant countenance. we'll conclude with this final point. We have high aspirations, but sometimes it pays to realize that our wife, she shouldn't be treated less than the neighbor's wife. What do I mean? There are certain things you'd never tell the neighbor's wife. You'd never tell some stranger on the street certain things. You would never speak that way to someone else. But because we develop a close relationship with our wives, sometimes we let ourselves get away with certain things. Saying certain things that are unkind, that's not right. So she should never be less than a stranger. She has to be much more than a stranger. Okay, so what did we discuss today? Let's summarize. What did we discuss? The greatest asset and warmth, the home. It doesn't come overnight. It's something we have to build towards. We have to have patience. There are ups and there are downs, and that's normal.
Partnership.
It's a partnership. It's we'll discuss. It's much more than a partnership. You want to get to a point where it's an extension of yourself. There's a lot to discuss in each of these realms. We'll get there. Lot. We discussed the idea that the religious home is supportive of shalom bayis, but not in the way that would seem easiest. We discussed you can't have pressure in the home. We discussed that a person should try to draw a vivid picture in his mind of where he's headed. And the more details he has, the more he can imagine how to get there. And we have to have realistic goals for ourselves. We said that sometimes you realize this isn't a realistic goal for right now. Yes, in general, I want to wake up with a smile for my kid. But when it's the fifth time that he's woken me in the middle of the night and it's been 3 months this way, it's going to be very hard to wake up with a smile. And you know what? Somehow you get the feeling that a three-month-old doesn't really care if you got up with a smile or not. It might be good for you to get up with a smile, but I can tell you, I worked on it. I developed songs. Maybe one day I'll put them out. I have songs that at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, what are you going to do with the kid? So I started inventing songs. My wife didn't like him, so it was a bad idea. Yeah.
Although what he thought about a 3-month-old child is not true. Recently, I read research that says that the kids, the younger they are, the more they use their brain. That's why the kids are so easy to learn the language in the first 2 or 3 years of their life.
They use other parts of their brain. Yeah. They use other parts of their brain.